To you, we're out of time. Maybe you can flip the phone back to Frank, and we want to welcome you back again and again. It's a courageous thing that you are all doing, fasting against police violence. Frank, thank you, and thank everybody for me, okay?
Okay, Dennis, thank you for having us on.
All right, talk to you soon.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging. Now I'm a farmer, and I'm digging, 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 digging.
Well, good morning. This is KBOO, Portland, Oregon. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. We are recording this, pre-recording this, before the show is being actually broadcast, but we are recording it live. And by we, I mean my co-host and co-pilot, Jim Gilbert.
Good morning, Glenn.
All the way from Liberal.
In scenic liberal Oregon.
And I'm at my home in Northeast Portland.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, the technology. And we have to thank our recording engineer, Joe Wilson, who is in the Beaverton area. So it's amazing what we can do these days.
Yes, Joe Wilson with Bergman Productions. He's made this all happen, and we appreciate his help and tenacity in trying to get this all set up. But we've got a full show. And we don't really have a garden stumper. Jim, do you have, maybe you'll just come up with a garden stumper in the meantime, but we don't have any way for you to answer that.
Yeah, I can think of all sorts of stumpers. Even I have a stumper connected to the dictionary term we're going to use. Unfortunately, though, as you said, people don't have a way to answer it.
Yeah.
But
you can answer it towards the end of the show.
But sure.
That means that you have to remember to answer it there.
Well, I think I can do it.
Right. We'll have our normal music breaks here. It's kind of I think a nice little tribute theme going this month. And our plant of the month, Columbia Star Blackberry. It's relatively new on the market. It's not really being grown in too many places, but you can buy it. And I'm growing it, and it's a good one. We are also harvesting figs now, and Jim will talk at length about figs. And also harvesting pears. The pear harvest has begun, but when is the right time to harvest pears? We'll give you a refresher on that. Also, what else is going on out the farm, Jim's farm, out there in Liberal, between Era and New Deal? Is that what it was?
Actually, we're located between Liberal and Needy.
Needy. Yeah, that's it. And also, we can still plant cover crop now. And in fact, I've been doing so, and I'll talk about what's happening there. And then, what's a good way to attract beneficial insects besides having pest insects? Water. putting out water, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. If you have any questions, we'll have a new email address that we will be able to give you next month. But in the meantime, if you have any questions that you'd like to have answered next month, you can write to me at KBOO. There must be a way that you can do that through the Dirtbag site, and we'll go from there. So up first today is What's Annoying Glenn? And this isn't so much annoying, it's just an observation that I've been having for the last year or so. And that's what I consider the increase of the word feel. That people talk about what they feel rather than what they think. I feel the president is doing X. Well, is that the right use of that word? I mean, can't we just say, I think this is what the president is doing? So it's not just an annoyance, but I've noticed that this change in the linguistics of the somewhat younger generation, we might say. That's just something I've noticed.
Well, I might make a mention of something else that's sort of similar to that, which is the evolution of the word, when you say thank you to somebody and the response is no problem.
Yeah,
I find that sort of challenging because I wonder, well, what if there were a problem, and what would we do then? so it's really interesting. Sometimes I want to come back. I say, I'm really glad there's no problem, but yeah. I don't do that.
Yeah. Well, language is what it is, but that's it's hard to communicate if we all have different definitions.
Yeah. But it is interesting. I'm a language student, so I find it sort of fascinating. There's the evolution of pay instead of hi.
Yes.
So I get an email from somebody applying for a job, and if they're a certain generation, they will write to me, hey, Jim, not hi, Jim, or hello, Jim, but hey.
Certainly more informal.
It's a shout out, I guess, but it's unusual.
I wonder if there's a linguistic program on KBOO. I don't think there is, and I don't think we want to take it on. We've already spent several minutes on it, let's get back to gardening. So,
yep.
In any event, Columbia Star Blackberry. This is a relatively new thornless blackberry. And while I have heard it called a thornless Marionberry, it's really not a thornless Marionberry. Marionberry is some of the parentage of it, but it only accounts for about 20% of it. I was reading some of the very scientific papers that were released about the same time or following the studies that were done, the trials that were done for these berries. And the parentage is, it was a collaboration between the OSU Experimental Station in Corvallis and from New Zealand, some of the plants there. And there was just a few parents of the Columbia Star Blackberry that actually had names. All the other ones were numbers, which I thought was rather interesting. And this another one of the parents is the Lincoln Logan. You ever heard of that one, Jim?
I have not.
Lincoln Logan. No, it's about three generations back, but they crossed that with a Marionberry and then with these New Zealands, 44, 16, and 47 to 18 and whatever. But what they say, it's introduced as a very high quality, high yielding, machine harvestable, thornless trailing blackberry with firm, sweet fruit that when processed are similar in quality to or better than fruit from the industry standards Marion and Black Diamond. Have you heard about that one, Jim?
I have heard of Black Diamond, yep.
Yeah, so that must be very popular for machine picking. But at least my Columbia Star this year ripened a week or two before the Marionberries. In the trials, it was about 3 days on average that they ripened earlier, and the harvest period ended about the same time. There doesn't seem to be a downside to the Columbia Star. I don't think the flavor is Marionberry, but it's good. It's close. I'll grow another type of thornless blackberry called Triple Crown, and it's in its peak right now, which is early August. And the problem that I've had, although it doesn't seem to be showing up this year with the Triple Crown, is that I get the spotted wing Drosophila fruit fly in my patch, and it just ruins whatever berries are on the vine. And so my goal has been to find earlier blooming blackberries, because the pests really don't show up in earnest until August 1st or so. So I'm very pleased, and I'm going to be grubbing out some of my triple crowns and some of my Berrien berries and putting in the Columbia Star. I did make mention that I haven't seen a big problem, maybe even a problem at all, with the spotted wing Drosophila in my triple crown blackberries this year, and for that I'm very pleased. And they're just huge. I mean, bigger than your knuckle.
Wow.
So it's a good tasting one, although I don't think quite as good a tasting as the Columbia Star. So hence my plan to grub out some of those that be replaced.
Well, thornlessness is a real nice advantage. Feature, I would say. So
yep, and they are pretty vigorous. They'll send out this trailing canes, but not as vigorous as the triple crown.
Mm-hmm.
And my standard for pruning, and Jim, you said you don't grow blackberries anymore?
Not really. A couple on the place. We shouldn't say the blackberries grow here. We're not growing them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, they are, they're so big that I can't, canes are huge. They're about an inch in diameter sometimes. Wow. And I prune them off at the top of the trellis, maybe 4 or 5 feet tall. And I've pruned them off this time of year, and or maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and just pruned them off. So it's just the stump but when I cut it off, it sends out horizontal branches that are easy to tie to the trellis. And it's just great. And I just put one every 2 feet or so, and it's wonderful. Just a great crop this year. So I'm pretty pleased with that.
So after you cut it back, and then the new canes that grow this year bear the fruit next year. Is that correct?
That's correct. Right. They are growing now. And mm-hmm. when I cut out the old canes, the ones that are producing now, I'll tie those to the top wire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really works well.
Good. Great.
So Columbia Star, those are available around town. I've seen them for sale, so you can look for them. And I don't think they spread as much as the wild blackberries.
Yeah, wild blackberries are pretty interesting. We battle them and we eat them. My grandkids are visiting right now, and they just can't. They just love it. They go out and Grandpa, here's a black one. You know, yeah, it's great, very tasty. Love it. You know,
yeah.
But on the other side, I've got my pruners out. The canes that are shooting out from the base of these are you know, already 6-8 feet long and ready to make a whole new invasion into our farm field. So
yeah.
Keep back.
Okay. Well, let's take our first musical break here, and we'll come back and talk about figs. The theme that I started out with for this month of August, since we're doing a lot of harvesting, I thought, well, let's just go for harvest. But then I thought, no, I remember that I wanted to pay tribute to some of the musicians that I've played in the past on this show that had passed away in the last couple of weeks is all it is in that case. So we will be paying homage to Peter Green and Charlie Daniels in the future. I mean, in later on the show. But the first selection will come from Neil Young, who wrote a couple of songs that had harvest in the titles. Of course, Neil Young has not passed away, but his wife passed away. This was a year and a half ago, so it's not really recent, but he wrote Harvest Moon for her, and her name was Peggy Young, P-E-G-I, only one G. But in any event, this is Harvest Moon, an unplugged version. Neil Young, Harvest Moon for his late wife, Peggy Young.
Nice song.
Okay, well, indeed it is. The, you know, one of the first major crops that we can start harvesting is figs, at least if it's Desert King. And Jim has been picking pounds of those every morning. My harvest is virtually done. I've dried a lot of figs, and I'm still eating some, but are you harvesting Desert King, Jim?
Glenn, it's interesting you mention about yours being done. And this year, more than ever, I've sort of paid attention to, I guess, one might call microclimates here in the Willamette Valley. I think a lot of people think the Willamette Valley is just all the same. I mean, everything is, it gets the same amount of heat and the temperatures and all of that. But there are differences. And where we live out here between Liberal and Needy, our nighttime temperatures are quite often 8 or so degrees lower than Portland. And even Aurora, not too far from us, has higher temperatures. So the ripening of figs, for example, we've started, and it's moving along right now. And today, my daughter and I and the grandkids, we probably picked, I don't know, 15 pounds of Desert King figs, and she's putting them in the dryer, already, as many as she could cut in half and dry. And there's a bunch in the cooler, and tomorrow we'll probably pick some more. I can't rave enough about Desert King. It's an interesting fig, and I was fortunate enough to go to a fig conference in Naples, Italy, in 2015, where they talked about all the different kinds of figs in the world, and there are hundreds and hundreds of varieties all over. Desert King is actually one of the best, and it's a very interesting fruit. For one thing, I love when I used to give talks on growing fruit, I would ask people, this could be a garden stumper sort of thing, you know, well, how many of you have seen a fig flower? Well, you know, I'd get a couple of people to raise their hands, and I'd say, well, that's interesting. You know, can you tell me, you know, where you saw the flower, where on the plant? And then they'd hum and haw a little bit and scratch their head. And finally, we realized that, no, they actually really had not seen a fig flower. And you know, of course, why that is, Glenn, correct?
That's right. Well, the flower, if you can call it that, and it's not really a true fruit. I did some research on this. It's inflorescence. It's the seed. The flower and the seed is inside.
That's right. And so you can't see it,
right?
That's kind of an interesting characteristic of this this very, very delicious fruit. And figs are not all the same. There are different types of figs. So at this conference, they talked about the common fig, which most fig plants are, the San Pedro fig, which is the Desert King fig, is that type, and then the Smyrna fig. And among the differences between them, the San Pedro type fig, the Desert King, it bears its main crop on the wood that grew last year. So that's why it's ripening right now, such a good crop, because it ripens in late July, early August, and it's good for us because it's when the weather is the warmest. It's not going to rain typically. It's just a really good time to be harvesting figs. The common fig, on the other hand, ripens its main crop on the wood that grows during the current season. Mm-hmm. And most varieties of common fig don't do so well here in the Pacific Northwest.
What are some examples of those that people might know?
Sure. The Laterula, which is one that we've marketed for years. It was one of the first figs planted here in the Portland area, is a common fig. And it's probably one of the best for us because it's fall crop, its late crop ripens about the earliest. But Black Mission, Codota, all of those figs that they grow in California that on large scale, they're all common fig varieties. For example, Black Mission and Codota just really don't ripen a good crop, the second crop here in our region typically. So that's why Desert King is such a good variety, and it just happens to also be extremely delicious and sweet. And it's like one of my very favorite fruits, and I love them chilled. I put them in the refrigerator and cool them down, and I just can't stop eating them. They're so good. But and they actually dry pretty well too. And we have enough of a crop where we want to dry them. Another interesting characteristic of fig is the pollination process. So Desert King doesn't need to be pollinated, and the common fig doesn't need to be pollinated. But those that do need to be pollinated, the Smyrna-type figs, they're pollinated by a very small insect, which has a very big name called wasp. And you think of wasp as something that's going to fly around and sting you and bother you and make miserable your life miserable. And the fig wasp is about the size of a fruit fly, and it crawls in the end of the fig and carries the pollen from the wild fig to those flowers, the inflorescence that's inside the fruit, and pollinates it. And the seeds from Smyrna figs are viable seeds, but typically the common fig that grows in our region is not viable because we don't have the pollinator.
So you don't need pollination to have fruit.
You don't need pollination
for our figs, for the Desert King and others here.
That's right. And as you've probably, I don't know if you've noticed this, but today I was kind of paying attention to it. It doesn't look like the spotted ring Drosophila is in the figs. I've not ever seen it.
I haven't either.
So that's kind of nice.
And they're really, it's very nice.
Yeah. And there really aren't any pests to speak of. I mean, birds.
Well, birds and squirrels and raccoons in the city.
Yeah.
And we hear them out every night rustling in the tree and then come out in the morning and they're just, you know, the dead ripe ones are on the ground.
Uh-huh.
So, boy, they can be, when they're dead ripe, you can't even pick it up really. I mean, it's just so soft.
Yeah.
It falls apart.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Those creatures aren't around our place to any amount. And birds this time of year, I think they're busy eating my neighbor's blueberries because the birds really don't bother the figs. I mean, occasionally I'll see a little strike on one, but not bad.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Another really interesting thing about figs to me, I compare them to apricots, which these two fruits have the characteristic you cannot ship them when they're fully ripe. So if you go to the store and buy figs, they're the ones from California, they're not ripe. They're kind of ripe and they taste like figs, but they're nothing like a really fully ripened tree ripened fig. And so we need to grow them at home. We need to grow them locally.
They don't ripen off the tree.
They don't ripen off the tree.
Yeah.
So you need to have your own. And I think if I were going to recommend at this point with what I know, and we're still learning, we've got some varieties that we've developed or found over the years that we'll probably be introducing soon. But right now, I think pretty much anywhere in the Willamette Valley and probably on the coast away from the ocean, Desert King will ripen. It might be mid-August, but it's very, very reliable with that first crop. Latarula would be probably my second choice because of its early ripening second crop.
When would that typically ripen?
If you're, depending upon where you are, probably where in Portland, I would say by the mid to end part of September.
Mm-hmm.
Out here, probably early October, but it's early enough that we can usually get a decent crop off of Latarula.
Yeah.
There's some varieties called, an interesting name of fig is brown turkey. And I think that we've seen this with figs. An orchardist might have a fig that looks dark and he calls it brown turkey or she calls it brown turkey. And then that gets there are more than one variety called brown turkey. So it's kind of hard to know which one you've gotten. The one we used to sell years ago came from California called improved brown turkey. I always wondered, well, where it was improved for because it didn't ripen here. We actually got one from Texas and it was called brown turkey and we named it Vern's brown turkey because my good friend and garden writer for the Oregonian, Vern Nelson, planted it on his garage in Portland and it ripened really well. So that's why it's called Vern's brown turkey. And that's a good one. For our region, but the others I question. There are some other ones. The figs have a long history in Portland. I actually have somewhere in all my stuff, I have a catalog from a fig nursery from the 1920s. There was a father and son that promoted figs. They brought figs from a lot of different regions. They planted them out in North Portland and tested them. And that's where Latarula came from. There's one called Neverella. Those varieties were ones that they found would work here, but many of them wouldn't. So it's a fun fruit. I think that, especially, I mean, for if you've got kids or grandkids, it's a fun thing to turn them on to a really ripe fig. It's a real great pleasure to see that smile on their face.
Well, one of the things that I discovered on the when I searched for facts of figs is that some people think that it wasn't apples in the Garden of Eden that tempted Adam and Eve, I guess, but figs.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So they've been around a long time.
They have been around.
Well, apples have too, but now, yeah. Jim, I have a question on figs ripening, and I've asked you this before, but maybe you have more information now, is that some of my figs, a good number of them, just don't get soft and essentially don't ripen. And they're the right size, but you squeeze them and or taste them and they're pithy and hard. They just don't ripen.
Yeah.
It's kind of a pale red inside.
Yeah. And this is Desert King, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I've seen that too. And I really don't have an explanation for it, Glenn. I noticed that there are a few on my tree too. Like I said, that happens. But by far, the vast majority mm-hmm. ripen well. And why an occasional one will just not do that, I can't explain it. Don't know.
Well, it seems to be that they're more, you know, maybe in the shadier spots. Have you noticed any correlation there?
Not really. I mean, I have ripe figs right in the center of a plant where they get no sun at all.
Yeah.
It seems like they. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's our pep talk for growing figs. Pretty darn easy. They can get big. Large. Huge if you let them. But you need to prune.
That's probably the biggest disadvantage of Desert King is it's the most vigorous one of all of the figs that we've grown.
Yeah. Mine has a trunk of at least more than a foot in diameter.
Yeah. Yeah. And that we should maybe mention pruning real quick too, is that with a San Pedro type fig, a Desert King fig, you want to be sure not to remove all of the old wood when you prune them, because you've taken off all of the potential fruit production. Like a Laterula, you can prune that harder and it will still make a fall crop on the new wood.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still experimenting with pruning Desert King, but the way that I seem to be finding most successful is take off about 50% of the current growth, the shoots, the branches that produce fruit this year, prune those back to if a branch is like, if it's like 6 feet long, maybe leave a 2 foot, prune it back to like 2 feet, and then it will send out new shoots the following year, which will then bear fruit in the spring.
Well, it's been my experience that it's any growth that happens in the spring will send out new growth and have fruit next year. But if I was to prune off something now and it sent out new growth, that wouldn't have fruit next year.
No, that's right. It'll be the following year.
Right. So my recommendation is to prune in February when it's dormant. For one, you can see. You can see which branches are new and which ones will have the little buds on, the little fruit buds on them even. But if it's, you know, so any new growth in the spring will have fruit. That's just what I've remembered there.
Yeah, the challenge is if for maximum harvest, you could leave all of the old wood on, but then you won't. Then you're going to, the tree is going to get taller and taller, and that the producing wood is going to get taller and taller. So to keep the tree at a reasonable height, you have to kind of sacrifice some of the fruit wood to keep producing new shoots from lower down.
And it's worth it because, I mean, it'll overproduce otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, if the trees are, you know, or anything over 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I find myself, when I get onto a 12-foot ladder, I don't like being up there that far anymore.
Yeah. Especially with a chainsaw.
Yeah. There you go.
And some of my branches are big enough that I am chainsawing them down now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
One thing nice about fig wood is pretty soft, so it's pretty easy to prune.
Yeah. Pretty wet too. It takes a long time to dry.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's our talk on figs. And don't hesitate to grow it. It does, you know, you have to devote some space to it because it's a tree.
but you can keep it small.
Yeah, it's worth it. I think there's hardly a better fruit you can grow.
All right.
Continuing with our tribute, now our musical tribute here, we'll next turn to Peter Green, and we've played him before. I imagine many Garden Dirtbag listeners know who Peter Green is, but I imagine there are plenty that don't. He was an old, not old, he was a young guitarist in the 60s, and he had the distinction of taking over for Eric Clapton in John Mayall's Blues Breakers, and after a stint there, he went on to form, and the group was actually known as Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac, which was named for the two other members, at least that time, Mick Fleetwood, the drummer, and John McVeigh, the bass player, I think. But Peter Green was the main man in Fleetwood Mac to begin, and he didn't last a whole very long with Fleetwood Mac as we now know them. In fact, he quit the album before they came out with Rumors, which was, of course, just this big smash in the 70s. But Peter Green stayed true to his blues roots and wasn't a real flashy player, but really melodic. And even if you've never heard Peter Green play, you've probably heard one of his songs. And I thought, you know, do I want to play this one or not? But this is a much lesser played version, but he wrote it. And it's one that Santana made famous, which was, or is, Black Magic Woman. So we'll listen to Peter Green's version of that.
I got a black magic woman. I got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman and she's trying to make a devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Don't turn your back on me, baby. Yes, don't turn your back on me, baby. You're messing around with your tricks. Don't turn your back on me, baby, cause you might just break up my magic spell. Got your spell on me, baby. You got your spell on me, baby. Yes, you got your spell on me, baby. Turning my heart into stone. I need you so bad, magic woman. I can't leave you alone. Yes, I need you so bad.
Peter Green was, gosh, I can't remember now, 71? Anyway, Black Magic Woman. Jim mentioned that there are some horticulturalists that have passed away recently, too, that you would like to mention.
Yeah, I was actually struck and very saddened by a passing of a man named John Brittain, who owned Nolan River Nut Nursery in Upton, Kentucky. Died in June and was a really good guy and great horticulturalist, and I miss him a lot. And before him, another man that I, a really close friend and fellow traveler, a man named Jerry Lehman, who was an advocate of pawpaw and American persimmon, lived in Indiana. I traveled with him to the former Soviet Union in 1991 with four other Americans, and he recorded that journey. In fact, Joe Wilson helped make a video of part of the journey, and we hope to actually make a video of more of it eventually. But if you go on YouTube to Lunch in Sukhumi, S-U-K-H-U-M-I, you will come up with a video of some pretty interesting music, and where we all of us had lunch with some horticultural researchers at the experiment station in this was the country of Georgia and the city of Sukhumi. So those two men are greatly missed.
Okay, well, it is August and always something happening. Pears are going to start ripening, or like we mentioned, they are. Ubeline is it in my tree. Is done. I've harvested them all and I've eaten them all. There's only about a dozen pears because I have them espaliered. But I learned finally that ubeline does ripen so darn early, even well before the Bartletts. And in the past, I'd leave them on the tree, you know, they can't be ready yet. And then by the time I would, they'd start falling off, and then they're all mealy, you know, if edible at all. And so it's it bears repeating. I think we probably give you an annual update on how to harvest pears when they're ripe.
Yeah, pear coaching.
Yeah, just keep in mind that virtually every pear should be harvested before it's ready to eat. So in other words, not ripe. Harvest it before that even. So how do we know when it's time to get it off the tree? Because you can't just bite into it like an apple to see if it's ripe, which doesn't ripen off the tree.
Yeah.
You cradle the pear in your hand and just gently lift up. If you have to twist hard to get it off, it's not ripe. But if it comes off relatively easily, cleanly, then take it.
Yep. And then what do you do with it, Glenn?
Well, it depends what kind of pear it is. In that case, I think there is the Bartletts, for example, really don't need a cold period to ripen properly, although I do move them into a cooler location, my basement, to let them ripen. A Bartlett pear, which is probably the most common pear that we see around town, will be green, completely green, darkish green when you harvest it. And it will start turning a lighter green and then even to a slight yellow for part of it. But a better way to tell if it's ripe is just does the flesh give under slight pressure from your thumb? And of course, if you have a lot of pears, you can slice into them and see, hey, is this ripe yet? Does it taste good? If it's a later ripening pear, such as an Anjou or a Bosque, those are what we call a winter pear, even though they're harvested now, well, not now, September, probably, even into some in October, you can even do that, and August. Those do need to undergo cold storage before they will ripen nicely. It's not critical that they undergo cold storage, but if you want that nice, buttery, smooth pear experience, harvest them when they're green, put them in your refrigerator or other cold storage for a month, and take them out as needed a few days before you're ready to eat them, and they'll ripen up on the counter. Does that meet your approval, Jim?
Yep. And you know, it's funny, isn't it? You said, think about, well, I'm going to want to eat a pear in about a week from now. So I'll get that pear out of the cold storage and put it, you know, I think a lot of us want a little more immediate gratification. But
well, you just got to pull them out every day and some every day.
That's right. Just eat a lot of pears. And I probably should also mention that we're not talking about Asian pears.
Well, which, good point. Yeah. We can talk about that too.
Yeah, and Asian pears don't ripen off the tree. You pick those when they are ripe and ready to eat. And of course, they're quite delicious and very nice fruit. But they come off the tree the same way the word ripe is sort of interesting, you know. So yeah. Ripe and eatable might be a different way to say it, but they're ripe and eatable when they lift up, the same thing you just talked about, when you pick them up with your hand gently and they just come off, then they're ready to go.
That's Asian pear.
Yep.
and there are certain varieties that are ripe now.
Yeah, this would be early, but Shinseki would be one that would be.
That's kind of a somewhat brighter yellow.
Yeah, it's a yellow. It's a yellow Asian pear. And then the darker skinned ones like Chojuro and Raja, and those they're ripened later, early September typically at our place, maybe earlier at your spot. But
yeah, well, my Chojuro is not anywhere near ripe yet.
Yeah.
I'm trying to give it more water this year to see if I can get a little bit larger.
Mm.
Of course, then I coupled that with not thinning as much as I should have either. So I may.
That thinning process is pretty important if you want to get big fruit, and you can get quite large fruit. You can get remarkably large fruit if you thin them, but that's an extra step that a lot of people don't go to.
Yeah.
And there's a Korean variety called Large Korean. It has a couple of other names. It can get as big as a grapefruit.
I think I've sampled some of those at the All About Fruit show.
Yeah, you need to happen this year. You need to invite several people for your dessert party to consume that pear.
I'm assuming the All About Fruit show will probably be canceled. Have you heard anything, Jim?
Yeah, it's not happening.
Not happening, yeah. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
I did want to mention here, while I'm thinking of it here, moving on to what else is happening in the garden, is that normally when I start my onions, I'll start them in just a 4-inch pot or so that's 4 inches deep so I get some good root growth. But I just scatter the seeds on them, and then it grows kind of like a grass, or if you're starting, well, like grass. And then I separate those and transplant them out. Well, one seed grew. It must have, I don't know how it got into another pot just by itself. And so I thought, I'm just going to leave this one in. This is a little 2-inch pot, I think. And so I watered it and, you know, just like all the other ones, kept them inside. And then when I transplant the onions out probably in April or so, later than I would like, but time, I do what time allows. And that onion was bigger when I put it into the ground, obviously, maybe 3 or 4 times as big. And now that sucker is, it's at least 4 inches in diameter. It may be more than that. I mean, I guess that's what at least means, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 5. And I've been pouring the water on it too, just to see how big it will get. But
no contest, right, for the largest onion.
Well, not in my garden, boy. That's it. But I will talk about just briefly about, well, when do we harvest onions? And the rule of thumb there is when half of the onion stalks have fallen over on their own, then force the rest of them over and stop watering, or then they'll kind of harden off. And these are storage onions that I'm talking about. I also have a nice healthy crop of Walla Wallas going. But and then after the soil somewhat dries out, then I harvest them and put them in a further drying location out of the sun, but with good ventilation. I don't recommend pulling them and leaving them on the soil. We get some hot sun, and they can scald and burn the onion skins. So, and that will be coming up soon. Some of my onions have started to fall over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we've had our share of warm weather too. So I think it seems like things are, even though I thought it was going to be a late summer, it feels like things are ripening a little earlier than usual.
Huh.
I don't know what your thoughts are about that, but.
Well, to me, you know, in the past, for the past 41 years, it's always been divided in before the Scandinavian Festival, where I have my food booth where I'm gone the first 2 weeks of August generally, and after the festival. And so if I don't get things done beforehand, then it's, of course, it's all later. And things start ripening up during this time and when I'm gone. For example, green beans, you know, I keep up with them before I go. And then by the time I come back, they're just out of control. But of course, this year there is no Scandinavian festival, and so I'll be able to pay attention more. So I think things are about normal. It may be a little bit early. You know, maybe some things are a little bit late.
The test for us comes about in the fall when the persimmons ripen. That's kind of when the persimmons and pineapple guava. Last year we had a very disappointing experience. We had 22 degrees here on October 22nd, and the persimmons and the pineapple guava hadn't ripened yet. They were coloring up, and I was looking forward to a nice harvest, and they were just basically frozen on the tree, and that was that. No further ripening. Of course, they just were totally useless.
So you didn't really get any persimmons last year?
Only American persimmon.
Oh, yeah.
That were earlier. but all right. The Asian persimmons didn't work. That of course leads me into a comment about you were talking about the Columbia Star Blackberry, and it made me I have a project going on here, and I'm sure I've told you about it, and also mentioned it to listeners. Of we're doing some breeding work with Seaberry and pineapple guava and other things, and I can only imagine how many blackberry plants had to be grown to come up with Columbia Star.
Yeah.
You know, it's a numbers game, thousands probably, you know, and somebody has to walk down the row and sample all those fruit.
Tough job.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd want somebody that has a good palate.
Yeah. Yeah. And good eyes and knows clearly what they're looking for too.
Right.
So,
well, speaking of Americana or American, we did lose another musician, as I mentioned, Charlie Daniels, and I've never played Charlie Daniels on this show, but I have, I think, played Marshall Tucker in the past. But anyway, he was a frequently played with the Marshall Tucker Band, and this is from one of their very, maybe their first or second albums. It was their second album. Where We All Belong? Yeah, Where We All Belong, which was one studio album and one live album in this two LP set. And the song, they actually introduced Charlie Daniels in it, and he says, you know, we'd like to ask a brother of ours, Charlie Daniels, to come up and play. And so they do. He does, on plays fiddle on this song, 24 Hours at a Time.
We're going to ask a brother of ours, Charlie Daniels, has come up here with us from Nashville, Tennessee tonight. Play a little fiddle with us. A little song on the New Life album. It's called 24 Hours at a Time.
Charlie Daniels passed away late July 2020. That's Americana right there. Okay, Jim, you said you were doing some budding. Budding meaning grafting at the farm?
Well, yeah, and some people call it bud grafting, but basically this is the time of year when we start growing our new fruit trees. We've planted rootstock out in the field in the spring. It's grown all summer. Now in August, we take buds from the varieties that we want to grow. For example, Gold Rush apple. We go out and take branches off the existing trees, take the leaves off, take the little bud that's at the base of the leaf, cut a little spot on the trunk of the rootstock, put the little bud there, wrap it with a piece of tape, and it sits for 30 days. And if everything goes well, and it usually does with apples, it heals and becomes part of the trunk. And then in March of next year, we will cut the top off the rootstock just above the bud, and that bud will start to grow, and we'll make a Gold Rush apple tree, which we'll dig the following fall.
How many are you doing of those, would you say?
Oh, probably 200 to 300 of that, just that variety.
Uh-huh. And how many total apple trees, for example?
Oh, probably 8,000.
And you get at least 7,000 that take?
We get, with apples, you get really good success. I'd say more like, if you did 8,000, you might get 7,850 or 7,900. Yeah, it's pretty successful.
Huh. Do you just train people that have never done this before, or these people have done it for quite a few years?
No, we're very fortunate to have very experienced budders that have done it for a long, long time. And we used to have a team of six. Right now we have a team of three. We had six people doing it. The three of them would actually do the budding, and then right behind them, somebody would come and wrap the tape around. So you could produce more trees that way, of course, but there's a real problem right now, a real shortage of labor in agriculture, and our crew is about one fourth the size it used to be. So the budder now buds and wraps their own buds. It's an interesting process, though, and a lot of people don't really understand how, you know, that the process, this, I mean, the budding is the same as grafting, except you do it in August, where you would do grafting in the spring, and budding takes less material, and it's faster than grafting. So why we do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very good. I've just been planting, just this morning, I planted another bed, or actually reseeded a bed of carrots. I lost about 99% of the carrots to slugs. So I reseeded a bed of carrots just this morning. So
99% is a lot to lose.
Yeah, pretty disheartening there to me too.
Boy.
But I also have been planting phacelia, which is one of the Oregon State did a study some years ago, or not some years ago, but in the last few years, and this is one of the top five plants that attracts beneficial insects. And I'm doing it not only for the beneficial insect parts, that is to say ladybugs and syrphid flies and wasps, but honeybees. They visit them a lot. And it's a nice bloom too. It takes about 30 days for a bloom to come. If you also, another cover crop to plant this time of year would be buckwheat. That's another fast growing insect attracting plant too.
What? How do you spell the name of that first one?
Phacelia, P-H-A-C-E-L-I-A, Phacelia.
I never heard of it, Glenn. Interesting.
And I've planted some around the neighborhood, too. But the neighborhood doesn't know that.
Where do you get the seeds?
Well, this particular seed came from a neighbor who was growing it. And a couple months ago, I told her that I missed an opportunity to, because there was a house that had been taken down, and it had been just the ground was growing. They seeded it with grass just to keep it from being washed away, the ground. And I thought, gosh, I could have gone in there and just thrown down some phacelia seed. And so I told her that, and she said, well, I saved seed from last year. And so she went and got a sack full of them that were in her basement, and then I took the threshed them, if you will, got the seed, and then I planted some in this lot, and they started to germinate and whatnot. And then the heavy equipment showed up, and so I never did get to do that. And now there are two houses that are being built there. So
well,
that's where I got that seed.
Yeah, interesting.
Okay, let's see. Anything else? Put out water. That's an excellent way to attract insects and to get to observe them up close. You'd be surprised at how many insects will visit a bird bath or a tray with pebbles in it or even a moss bed. Just keep something wet all the time and you'll have insects that show up. Pretty fun way to do it. It's kind of like bird watching.
And we forgot the dictionary term.
Oh, we sure did. Bricks. Yeah. Did you do that in 30 seconds?
We could probably at least mention it. So yeah, bricks, B-R-I-X. And I'm using right now the concept to measure the ripeness of sea berry fruit. And there's a special, I'm going to do a garden stumper, even though see if anybody will send us an email with the answer, but what instrument is used to measure Brix, B-R-I-X? Brix is the measure of soluble solids or sugar in juice, for example.
I know that answer because we also use the same one to determine the moisture level of honey.
Ah, yeah, that would, yeah, sure. And people use it, and wineries use it for wine, for alcohol even too. Anyway.
Well, if we get a correct answer, you know, they can win a free sharpening at the Coley Farm Store.
That would be very cool.
Shears, shovels, hose. Send your answer to Glenn at KBOO.
Yeah, I hope it works.
All right. We can talk more about bricks next month there too, so.
Sure.
All right, well, that's it for this hour. Jim, thanks a lot.
Appreciate my pleasure, Glenn.
Spending the time with us this morning. And once again, our extreme thanks to Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions, who has been...
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.